All right. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Sexuality and Speculative Fiction. In case you haven't already met them, which I consider very unlikely, this is Richard Morgan. Should we have him? And I'm Vanessa. Said anything yet? You shouldn't be clapping.
Sorry,
once you get behind the table, you become important.
We can't see your knees.
Okay. Just as a side note, I should probably take this up. We have prizes.
Yay!
Very kindly donated by HarperCollins and Fantastic Planet, so yay for them. Thank you. I'm going to let you guys choose the criteria for this, for giving out these. If you feel a particular question is particularly outstanding, hand out a book.
Yeah, cool question, definitely. Yeah.
Okay. Okay, to a certain degree, this panel is basically originated around two basic ideas. One was sexuality as in a relationship, and the other one was sexuality as in characters of a sexuality that we found unusual. So both of these topics are going to be discussed. But the basic idea of this panel was, to what degree is a character's sexuality or his or her relationship, or its relationship, important in speculative fiction? So are these key to the telling of a story, or are they simply an added hook to bring, you know, gain audience attention, or are they the main thrust with the fiction being a dot into it as well? So basically, there is an entire subgenre which I'm going to be very annoyed about, but I feel about that. So from characters, we're going to discuss everything from characters with, for whom a relationship is critical to their motivation, to, you know, and, or their sexuality is critical to their motivation, to, you know, books which are porn with plot added. So, porn without plot even. Yeah, that happens too. Okay, maybe I ask you, as an author, why would you include sexuality in the character's backstory plot?
Okay. I think, actually, the best reason for including sexuality in the plot, I was truly gave last night at the panel, where she said I was determined to put something in that would be my books would not be for young adults. That was a really nice idea. I've come in for a certain amount of flack recently for writing a fantasy novel with a... it was kind of hard to pin down what the flack's for, actually. Ostensibly for writing... a gay male character. It seems to be because the gay male character actually has gay male sex. Apparently, I don't know this for a fact, but I'm told that there are a lot of gay males in fantasy fiction who don't really have sex. They sort of just drift about being fae. Very nice. The reason there are very, very strong plot-based reasons I imported gay sexuality into the fiction. And basically it was down to the fact that I was looking for an iconoclastic, mouthy, thuggish sort of guy, because most of my protagonists seem to be that way. And the problem is with a fantasy setting, that, especially an epic fantasy setting, where you're looking at a sort of medieval-esque setup, lippy, mouthy iconoclasts tend to get their heads chopped off really fast. So I was kind of screwed for, how's this guy going to survive? You know, long enough to make it a book. So the obvious answer is, right, well, make him a member of the privileged classes, because the privileged classes always get away with all sorts of stuff that no one else does. Mm. But, you know, if you make him a member of the privileged classes as a medieval society, why is he going to be iconoclastic? It's like he's got everything on a plate, you know, life is good. So why the hell would he care? You know, it's like all these softer sensibilities that we've got, that we take for granted, they're all pretty recent. You don't have to back up many decades, certainly not many centuries before the idea that, oh, you know, human life is worth something, and you know, your station in life doesn't determine how good or bad a person you are. These are relatively recently. They're not recent concepts, but they're certainly recent as far as actually having any impact on society goes. So I needed something to make this guy an outsider, despite his position of wealth. And it just struck me while I was playing around with the character that, well, if he's gay, that's it, because you can't do anything about that. That's something that you're born with.
Mm.
And once born with something that is despised by, or ostensibly despised by, the broad sweep of the society you live in, doesn't matter how much money you've got, you're going to be always on the run, to some extent.
Mm.
And the character of Ringill just grew out of that. And the more I sort of mined it, the more I thought, I've really got something here, you know. And yes, so he turns out to be very, very tough indeed, very unpleasant, very, very edgy, because he's had spent his whole life just trying to survive. You know, it's the most cold-blooded piece of, you know, sort of using something for a plot purpose that I've ever done. Sadly, many people didn't see it that way.
I really enjoyed Ringo, actually, as a character. I thought he was fabulous.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Post it on a message board somewhere.
I love Ringo.
Sorry, I'm sorry about with character names. The other two main characters do remain, because, again, you had very strong sexuality with those the other two main characters as well.
Yeah, I think that, with the other one, the lesbian character, it was really a sense of, I was looking for some way in which she'd be unified with Ringo in her past, and that seemed like an easy one. And also, it's just the first scene, her first scene, where she goes to see the Emperor, who she's supposed to be serving, and he's messing about with a slave girl, who she kind of fancies herself. And she doesn't like slavery, but she's living in a society for women. And again, once I started to mine it, it's like, whoa, off we go. And then Edgar was a barbarian, and I just thought, okay, really got to start, you know, balancing the gender politics a bit here. So let's at least have one guy who's straight.
You know.
So he's my token straight guy. Yes, and yes, quite. And I think there was a deliberate attempt on my part to make the sex that Edgar has not very different from some of the sex that Ringill has. So that your any attempt to kind of say, oh, he's shagging stable boys, it's like, yeah, this guy is getting jerked off by milkmaids, you know. And and also, I think another thing that we again tend to miss is this, and something that George R. R. Martin has come in for criticism for, is the sense in which, you know, this idea that sexuality is something that doesn't start till we're all about 20. It's an American perception, I think. But, you know, if you back up, people are being married, you know, and not the peasantry. This is, you know, people at high level of society are being married at 12 years old, 13 years old. It still goes on in large portion of the globe. So, you know, the idea that he's a man of 30-something and he's having sex with a 15-year-old is just, it makes no odds, you know, it's just there. And also it makes him a retrograde. I kind of like the idea of, you know, it's like, because I knew that the American, the sort of the more conservative core of the epic fantasy region would just love this guy because he's big and tough and he's a bit of a thug and he doesn't, you know, he's not very cultured, and it's just going to play right into that whole, you know, sort of Conan fan base. So I thought, okay, so let's give him something that's really, really unacceptable by 20th century standards. You know, with predictably that boom balances everything up, and people go, actually, maybe this Ringill guy.
Now, once books gets on the market and for sale, I'm sure the publishing houses look at work out what causes cash to come in and what's good for cash.
Mm.
What does their market research say about the relevance of sexuality in books and cash flow, and do they ever tell authors to change sexuality and in what ways to improve cash flows?
That's never happened to me. I know with my first series, with the first book, I had one particular character, Lord Daniel, who had been bullied as a student, and I decided to make this a homosexual rumour sort of thing that went around, and I knew that this character was a homosexual male, and but at that point in time, it wasn't relevant to the story. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't going to just bring into the story as a sort of gratuitous subculture, anything like that. But the second book, my agent said to me, it's a little bit short. You really need to see, we need to see more of the world, that these neighbouring countries you keep talking about. So why don't you send the character off and do something else? Yeah. So I thought, okay. I managed to get in a really good reason for him to go, which was to find out what Harlow had been up to.
Mm-hmm.
And And the only character who didn't have anything to do was Lord Daniel. So I thought, okay, I'll send him off on a trip. And as far as I'm concerned, stories that are about people plodding along on a quest, you know, are really boring to me. So I thought, I need to gate crash that. I need to have something happen that makes it more exciting. And the most obvious answer is a romance. So I gave him a nice little gay partner to have a romance with. But also at the same time, I realised that in the sort of society that he lived in, this would not be acceptable. Mm. Though it is sort of different the way it's regarded between the two countries, the country he came from and the country he's been ambassador for. So I had this whole, like, as you said, mining the whole intolerance, secretive, you know, sort of conflict thing. But I sort of slowly came to that because I decided if I was going to have a gay character, I'd have to do some research because clearly I'm not a male gay person myself. So I got some books. I got this fantastic book called The Gay Mystique from the library, and it was designed to be given to teenagers who were just discovering, you know, young males who were just discovering they were gay, except it had this fluorescent pink cover with huge capital letters going, The Gay Mystique. And I thought,
oh, you know.
Some poor teenager trying to sneak this spectacular.
No, Mum, really.
It was a hilarious book. It was really sweet and very, very good to read as in a, you know, how do you sort of come out and tell people how you do that? And I thought, okay, that's good. That gives me a whole sense of, you know, the close-knit politics of how do you tell people you love and stuff like that. Mm. Then I went back and I found a book called Hidden from History, which is homosexuality from way back to the classical times, like way back to the biblical stories and things like that. And then right through to, say, a couple of hundred years ago. And that was great because it told me that there were times in history where homosexuality was actually quite accepted.
Mm.
In a limited sort of way. Like, whenever there was a society that was really quite intellectual and advanced and lots of sort of, human rights, but not... we call that now, but everyone was very humanistic and stuff like that. Quite often there were communities of gay people and transvestites and, you know, a whole range of, you know, people who wouldn't normally be accepted were free to do as they please, and quite often they really did as they please, to the point where it was actually probably not very nice. You know, kidnapping young boys and turning them into slaves and stuff like that. So that was a great resource. So I sort of come back to my story and go, this particular era, it's kind of before Victorian but after medieval, you know, that sort of thing. This is about what it would have been. It wouldn't have been particularly well tolerated, but there was an awful lot of behind the stores, you know, people in the know knew who was and who wasn't. So I was able to work that in.
Mm-hmm.
But then I thought, okay, am I running the risk of preaching? I think preaching is the worst thing a writer can do. You want to raise questions but not answer them for people. I thought, okay, I don't want this to turn into what I call an issues book. And in the end, I realised that what I was actually doing was, I've known gay people all my life, it's just, you know, some of my friends. The point was to not make a point. You know, the point was just to have characters who just happen to be gay. I'm not pushing any sort of agenda. You know? And I found that readers really appreciated that. I wasn't trying to push it down anyone's throat or say it's good or bad or anything like that. It's just they are, and this is their story.
And you never came under, there was no pressure from your editor saying, can you tone this down?
No. I actually, at WorldCon, I went up to Kerry Greenwood, who I know had written some stories with the gay or lesbian characters, I can't remember off the top of my head what they were. And I said to her, do you think I should do this? Do you think, is there any reason why I shouldn't do this? And she said, no. She said, if anything, write what you want and then see if your editors balk. And they never did. Mm. The only criticism I've ever had has been one particular, I mean, I've had lots of gay people say to me, thank you. But I had one gay person email me once and said, gay men don't want to be in relationships, they just want to fuck lots of people. And I went, not the gay men that I know. They're all trying to get married, you know. And usually there are some young guys who want to just go out and have fun for a while, but eventually.
Did you mention you need heterosexual men?
Yeah.
Which one of you which still remains? Your editors or publishing companies sort of go, can you back off a bit, maybe? Or?
Well, my editor in London, I think he views me as a bit of a chemistry set. and he says, yeah, come on, right, you know, and listen. And then when it comes to him, he's like cackling with glee and yeah. Let's see if we burn the house down with this guy. So, he's been, I mean, he's great, he's been behind everything I've written. my American editor sort of, he's further away, so I can't hear him go. but he again has been fine, and there's never been any. I think very early on, when I turned in the second Kovacs novel for the American audience, I had a very strange experience when my editor got in touch, my New York editor got in touch, and he said, "We're wondering if you could write a prologue for the American edition." So I kind of looked back at the text, and I went, "Well, when you say prologue, what would I put in there?" And he said, "Oh, everything that's happened since the end of the last book up to the beginning of this one." Well, in the Kovacs universe, that turns out to be 30-something years. he's wearing a different body, he's on a different planet. And I kind of wrote back and said, no. I laid out the reasons why I didn't think it was a good idea, and I just said, look, I'm not going to do this. And so my editor wrote back, and he went, "Oh, fair enough, it wasn't my idea anyway." and he said, "But could you please give us an author's note?" So I wrote a sort of 5-line note explaining sleeving technology and saying, Kovacs has been away, he's been away for 30 years, he's been doing stuff, it's best not to inquire what, and 5 lines and left it at that. And since then, they've just left me alone. So I think, had there been any, at some level, somebody freaking out about it, I think they would have just said, "Look, let's not go there." I think probably it's true with both Trudy and myself. I think the fact that we sell well is a kind of armour. If you were working harder to break into a market or needing to push sales or something like that, I think maybe there might be more pressure. But it does come down to individual editors, I think, as well. Certainly there is that kind of pressure out there. I've heard that. But I've never seen it, for which I'm very grateful.
Well, it probably helped for me that I didn't... It's my first series. It probably helped for me that there wasn't much in the way of gratuitous anything. I mean, even when it came to the heterosexual relationships, because I didn't think I could actually pull off writing a sex scene yet. I didn't think I was skilled enough.
I'm saying nothing.
Whenever the characters got together, it was like, I just imagine it was like one of those black and white movies with the man and woman kiss, and then you get this black sort of circle. I just imagine it was like that. I didn't really have any detail. In fact, I've had people, friends laugh at me the one sex scene. it's just so surreptitious. You can almost not understand what happens. But I've had like 8-year-olds say, "So how do they make a baby?" she probably did at this point. You wouldn't pick up there. But like you said, the second series. The reason why I had sex in the second series is because when the first series was out, and I was at one of my agents' parties, and I was quite drunk, as often happens at my agents' parties. And one of the other guests said to me, "So Trudy, what do you write?" And I said, "Fran, can you explain to me? I'm too drunk." And she said, "Oh, it's fantasy books for young readers." And I went, "No, it's not." And sure, it's crossover and it's been marketed. I mean, 8 to 80, I say, you can read the first series. And so I then determined that I was going to make sure that the next series was not readable by teenagers. Actually, teenagers are probably fine, but kids. So I thought, okay, what can I do? Sex, drugs and violence. And I went, okay, violence. You have to write such a gratuitously violent book these days for it to not be suitable for kids. I mean, it's just, if anything, it's just really sickening to sell. Drugs, again, I don't like writing issues books. I don't like to push an agenda or anything like that. So that wasn't going to be the main thing. And I think, I don't think it would put them off either. But sex, the issue, all I have to put is put one sex scene in each book, and it's not going to be suitable for kids. Lots of fun writing them too.
Go on, Peter. Peter, the guy there.
No, just one of the things you said before, I was curious about it, and you brought it up, the fact that the main characters in Still Remains were sleeping with much younger people. Did you cop more flack? You copped a lot of flack for those characters being gay at various points. Did you cop more flack for them sleeping with people who were, by most standards, by most modern standards, underage in whatever countries people are coming from, or did you cop just that they were gay?
No, it's more the gay thing, to be honest. And I think that was instructive as well, because I think this critique is pretty much coming from one place, and that place is intense super masculinity. You know, a group of people who just cannot stand any kind of fracture in the armour of who they consider themselves to be as males. Fucking underage girls doesn't seem to be a problem for that mindset. You know, in fact, there's a large subsection of porn dedicated to that. You know, I mean, there's this magazine in America called Barely Legal. You know, which for me says it all. It's like, yeah, I'm quite sexual, but why would you want to? You know, there's been no attack on that at all. What has happened occasionally is that when the issue of morality has come up, someone has sort of, well, but he's having sex with a 15-year-old, so how can that be moral? And, you know, but it hasn't really been an issue, no. Perhaps, sadly, you know, it's a bit.
Connotations throughout the book, and maybe still going, I don't need to tell you if it's male or female. I just thought your thought, when you make those sort of decisions of going, I'm going to have a male hero or a female heroine or whatever.
When I just started writing the Black Magician trilogy with Sonia as the character, I was really tired of books which had a young boy who's heir to the king but hidden away for years, you know. And there was a lot of things about that trope I didn't like. A, it was the male, and I started writing a character who was female. And female whose strength wasn't in that to make her strong, to make her wielding a sword, or to make her necessarily royalty in order to be powerful. She's only powerful because she's determined and she's ethical and she's all these things, you know. She works damn hard to survive. Yeah, that's kind of what my decision making. But when I took that story in 1995 to a science fiction and fantasy workshop, one guy popped up and said, "No, I'm not another bloody woman character in space for male." It's like I was just doing what apparently a gazillion other people were doing. So
or not, because I think unfortunately you've got this thing with gender visibility that when a female character pops up, there's 10 times as much sort of attention paid to that. And so it's like, oh God, not another female character. But if you were to sit down and, you know, actually do the stats, you'd probably find that you're still in a tiny minority of people producing
this. I think since then it's a little out of it.
Well, the urban fantasy thing has sort of taken that by storm, maybe. But I still reckon if you were to take all the epic fantasy novels written in the last, say, 20 years, and look for protagonists' gender, protagonist sex, I think you're still going to find that the, you know, female protagonist is probably in a minority. Maybe not a huge, tiny minority, but I think it's still, and it's still worth doing. I mean, that's something that, but again, yes, I mean, you know, the realities of sexual politics through the centuries has been that women basically are using sex as a weapon, as a tool for getting by. And I think that's a slightly uncomfortable reality which we don't like to look too closely at these days. So when it's brought out, I think, yeah, there is this kind of, and plus, you know, the male readership, the core, you know, the Conan fans, you know, as far as they're concerned, no matter how much bodily fluids are spilled, as long as they're coming out of wombs, as soon as they're consensual bodily fluids, then they're saying, ah, no, I don't like that. Yeah.
Question, but just a comment of something that I read quite a while ago, which I haven't actually been able to find another copy of. I read this book that had a whole heap of short stories by, I think it was all female authors, and all the characters in the short stories are all female and really strong characters. And I thought, this is great. I've actually got a book that I really like that's got really good characters that are all, you know, dealing with things in different ways, but they're still showing themselves as strong. And I thought, oh, this is brilliant. But the bad side was, is I managed to lose the book. I couldn't find another copy in any library, and, oh, it was just the best. And I haven't been able to find anything even close to that since.
Adventures of Alex, maybe?
No, it was something, I remember part of the title of the book, something about warrior daughters. Something in warrior.
No.
All I remember is the book I managed to find in the Morley Library, and yeah, they never got it back in.
And how long ago was this?
Sometime in the 90s.
Right. Because I'm thinking, because in the 80s there was this kind of explosion of feminist SF and fantasy. And say The Adventures of Alex by what writer whose name I can't remember. Wasn't Joanna Russ, was it? Who wrote it? I don't know. But again, it's unfortunate that explosion sort of disappeared, and there's a lot of really cool stuff that could have gone somewhere and then it didn't. Mm. So it might have been part of that wave.
It was a bit of a shame, because like, it's just so great. I so wanted to read it again, but it went missing.
Actually, that... Oh, sorry. I was actually going to say that leads really well into a point that I was thinking about when I was setting up this panel, was has it become more appropriate to include sexuality and or romance in a fiction, in speculative fiction over time? You note really early on when you have things like, the production code in Hollywood, the Hate, Comics Code Authority, the Catholic Legion of Decency.
Wow, I've not heard of those guys.
They were 1933 to 2001.
Oh, shit.
They sort of persisted for a much longer time than I'd expected, But you sort of had things like in Hollywood where it started out initially and they went, sex, and then they suddenly went, no, bad idea. Stamped codes all over it and it got eradicated. So I'm just wondering, if you look at a lot of the fiction produced during that sort of very conservative time period, there's sort of this nibbling around the areas of sexuality, which,
it's taken a while to seep in. I mean, I've been all this con, I've been going on about Pynchon. And I mean, his first novel came out in 1963, called V. And there's a lot of fairly explicit sex in that. There's the sort of naming of organs at close proximity. And there's a really, really tender thing, actually, where this guy's lie after sex. He's lying on in his girlfriend's lap, and he said, with his ear nestling against her vulva as if it were a seashell or something like that. But totally no holds barred, But that was the mainstream, and that was also the sort of beat generation flowing into the 60s thing.
Mm.
And I think it has taken a while to wash up on the shores of genre. Mm. Not just SF, it's the same with crime, it's taken a while there as well.
I think part of the whole movie industry in the I was watching a piece of genre television era, say that, and I was quite pleased to see a female character who happened to be a lesbian, so that was just meant to be an aside type of background, and no big deal to be made of that. And I was impressed, so it's come a long way, it's really good to see that. And I didn't really make anything of ending until a friend of mine who is a lesbian sort of made a comment on her blog of, happy to see, but please, for God's sake, let us live. The character at the end of that episode of that show has, in a moment of self-sacrifice, died to say...
Because they're really nice people, let's be honest. They're really nice.
And then, from that point on, the scales fall to my eyes. Suddenly seeing film, television,
It's like the black best friend, isn't it?
It seems to be certainly in current film and television to be a lesbian is a deficit.
It's not even been that current. It's been quite consistent. At the 1990 World Con we had was held just like this. After which I talked to Kerry Greenwood, and they discussed how how it was such a cliche that if you had a gay character they had to die.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
It's like some sort of inherent punishment. And I think one thing that drove me nuts about Buffy was an angel, was that every single female character, whether they were gay or straight, if they had sex, they had to either die or turn into some sort of blue demon thing.
Oh no, I'm a demon again.
Yes, but then you get sort of trapped with that, because then when you have a gay character and maybe the plot says they should die, but not because they're gay, but everyone's going to read it into that. So you have to make sure your gay characters live now. Otherwise you'll get in trouble.
about sexuality generally, I think.
You don't seem to do stuff to the guys. He's always doing stuff to the females. They always get shot or turn into a demon or something.
Just to throw a question out, in terms of the balance of why you throw sex in, whether it's just a reflection of human nature, we are all sexual beings, whether it's a specific plot device, whether something particularly traumatic sexual event affects one of the characters, or whether it's just gratuitous, I don't want my books to be for teenagers. Where do you sort of throw that balance at the moment?
Well, I think there's been a bit of a problem over the last 10, 15 years. There's an awful lot of fantasy books where if you've got a female character, particularly a young female character, part of her rite of passage is she has to get raped at some point. Now, sometimes it's treated well, and sometimes it's just so gratuitous. It's like the young male character who's going to inherit the kingdom. His whole village will get killed so that he's free to go out and discover his destiny. And he never actually seems to have any grief over this at all. It's another really nasty cliche of the genre.
Mm. Ho-hum rite of passage.
Now she'll hate men for a while, and that'll mean she just doesn't get shacked up with someone, so she can go off and have adventures.
So, without mentioning Laurel K. Hamilton, at what stage does the sexuality just become too much and you lose the plot, the story?
When half the book's the same sex.
I confess I haven't read any.
I like how he's doing the book.
Oh yeah, there you go. Yeah. No, it's because I heard a nasty story about it and put me off.
Tell me later.
I think she's a bit of a fucking drama queen. But anyway, I don't want to badmouth other authors, and it doesn't affect what she writes anyway. So. Sorry, what's the question? sexuality.
Yeah.
I had this weird experience way back before I got published, when I was still teaching at university, and I was on one of these message boards for English language teachers, and something came up about a book that somebody was doing as a set text in class, and there was sex scenes, and how would they handle it? And this developed into quite a sort of snappy, snarly row about the whole issue of writing sex into fiction. And it was bizarre, because one woman, an American, said something like, the problem is that all these authors think that we think about nothing but sex, and that sex is the thing that drives our life. Well, those people have got it completely wrong, because very often you're just too tired. And, what about if you've got kids? And I'm just thinking, well, where did they come from? the truth, sad or joyous or however you want to view it, is that we're driven by two very basic urges, and those are survive, reproduce, and that's it. So the whole thing about sex and violence, those are the things that drive human nature forward. That's who we are. So for me, the whole thing about, people have asked me, why do you put explicit sex into your books? And it's always been for me, well, why wouldn't I? I put explicit violence, I put explicit angst, I put explicit, whatever, descriptions of a sunset. Why would sexuality not fit into there? And again, I think you're up against a very specific mindset, a sort of very puritanical mindset, that sort of thinks that sexuality is some abstracted thing that you go off into a private space to do and has nothing to do with the rest of life.
Mm-hmm.
The ground is shifting. We're starting to move into. And the problem is that this is the kind of backlash, I guess, that well, let's have lots and lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of sex. You reach a point where that suddenly starts to become dull.
Yes.
Swing back, hopefully, to an equilibrium where it's real, it's icky, but it's, a part of life. And it's fun. It's icky and it's fun. This is that's where the Puritans just cannot. They dare not go.
Even when you made it about, my thing, the real, it's the thing of, survival and reproduce. Mm. Well, gay characters don't reproduce, so.
Well, there's that, I suppose.
Yeah. I had lots of fun when I did finally get to write sex scenes. It's writing from the female point of view, and I've read a bit of porn over my life, and I was often struck with the fact that it's all about being penetrated, and I thought, well, why shouldn't it be the opposite way around? I mean, she's doing stuff to him, instead of him doing stuff to her, because it's kind of like you need two to tango here. So it's kind of the way I try. I try to just not too sort of, being obvious about it, but try to sort of swap over that sort of who's doing what to who kind of terminology.
I actually thought it was really interesting when I was reading your Voices of the Gods series. I'm sorry, I can't remember the name of this, one of the five gods. She's a predator. She's totally a predator. But in some way, it's almost like her sex life is divorced from the rest of her life. She's a voice, and then she has sex. Because she was so predatory about it, it was just like, it almost seemed like eating for her, from my perspective.
Yeah, it was an urge that she wanted to fulfill.
But it had nothing to do with how she viewed humanity or anything.
I thought you might be talking about Chael,
the
male gods.
Not the male
basically,
god.
I mean, the gods...
He's interesting, too.
The gods kind of have sex with humans, but they don't have physical form, so they just use, like, I suppose, electrical impulses to make people feel like they're having sex. Now, Jennifer Fallon found this really quite disturbing. She said, it's bestiality! It's another species with humans! I never thought of it that way. And she's like, ew, and I'm going, no, cool.
I was actually going to follow into that, because I was going to suggest that... I was going to ask you what you thought, because speculative fiction, simply because it's so speculative, often gets used to push the boundaries on what you can put in fiction.
Yes.
So, for instance, I read Startide Rising, and there's this dolphin that's constantly hitting on this human.
Yes.
And the human's going, oh!
And the dolphin's going,
yay! And then I did a bit of research, and I found that the dolphins really do find human females sexually attractive.
Yeah.
And I went, oh, really?
Yeah, I can't remember who I was talking to, but I was
apparently if you're a woman, dolphin the dolphin made an awful stock idea.
I can't remember who was talking about describing swimming with dolphins and how the male dolphin kept trying to mount them. dolphins is one of my big gripes, is because people think they're all so sweet and nice. But actually, they're really nasty creatures, and males will gang up and gang rape the female. They're not all that nice after all.
I was actually wondering if you were doing something along that line.
Well,
with
I wasn't
that.
Deliberately.
Because something else pushed the boundaries.
Yeah, so the problem with this particular god was he had this habit of finding a nice young female he really liked, and doing this and getting her so addicted to it, and then losing interest. He's a bit of a womanizer of a god.
Yeah.
And going to find some other woman, and she'd basically be like, and then kill herself.
Yeah.
It wasn't a very nice thing to do, so he was kind of reforming. Wrong at the start. He should have realized the error of his ways after several thousand years.
there was a question?
Stephanie, yes.
In the some promotional material that you did before spot on the ABC and this radio interview, there was a certain obsession with the sexual side of the equation. And I was actually thinking, during your guest of honor speech, I still have asked you a question about sex in the last show. Who's responsible for the interviews being so heavily oriented on orientation?
I think you had the most revealing experience there, didn't you?
We had this pre-interview where they ring up and say, what can we talk about? I see you're on a panel called Sexuality and Fiction. What do you think you might talk about? And I went, well, I suppose we'll talk about homosexuality, we'll talk about cross-species, we'll talk about gender issues, and we might even talk about reaching, and I said, Klingon condoms. And she went, and so, unbeknownst to me, they went away and they thought this was so funny. And when I got in, they said, oh, we're all intrigued by the Klingon condoms. And I went, really? So in the interview, she started trying to, the joke didn't work the second time around. I'm going, oh, no.
No, I mean, they tried to shuffle me in that direction in the pre-talk as well. But we got sidetracked into something else. But no, definitely, I think there was an agenda there, and the agenda was, oh yes, I fight there, those guys who dress up in funny suits and things, so,
let's have... The Vulcan is the Klingon.
Yeah.
It's progress.
But it's fascinating, isn't it? Because that, was such a focal point, but... I can't remember, was it Timothy Moe, well-known sort of post-colonial writer, he wrote something called Brown Out on Breadfruit Boulevard, I think, which is set in somewhere in the Malaysia or somewhere like that, and it's the book begins with a guy going to a prostitute for what they call it, coprophilia, i.e. she shits on him, he lies down and she shits on his chest, and it's very, very lavishly described. But I bet if Timothy Moe ever goes on, the book shows that you have here, they're not going to say to him, so, I'm shitting on people. That's just not, that'll just be, So about the post-colonial implications of your work, Timothy. So, we've got a long way to go.
We did try very hard to make sure we said that it was more than just these things.
I know, I think
you're
trying to...
Yeah. We're both... Peter,
who?
make that phone call.
This is what I do for a job.
It's just
female
Mel while you're sitting there.
Yeah. I didn't think about that.
So here, you, if you want, you can come up and pick a book. I think it's
and Bishop Theory
and then Lord King Hamilton.
Oh my God, they're all.
I think it's a series.
Do they get the whole series?
You can do it as a series.
Ah, there you go.
Take a lot. Right.
Thank you.
Any more questions? Still got to give away the long cat, Hamilton.
How did you come up with vaginas for two?
What?
Is it in Oxford Carbon? The first thing I was told about Oxford Carbon was the line involving pajamas for two.
Yeah, I don't remember that at all.
The context of it was when he was wandering around the mansion, he sees the wood stuff that he's so used to that's so rare on Earth. He says it's about out of place. It's as classy as the vaginal spittoon and that and something. So,
right. Yeah.
So what was the most wonderful? I wouldn't find one.
God, yeah. I don't know where that crawl. I tell you where that might be from. I remember in my A-level year doing French literature, and there's a book by a guy called Hervé Bazin. I don't know if anyone's heard of him or
You have to have another one. And
there's this book called Viper au Poing, which means viper in the fist, which is a bit iffy as an image in first place. But it's basically about this guy. It's supposedly, it's autobiographical, that's the scary thing. It's about this kid growing up with this incredibly cold and brutal mother in a sort of upper middle class, Catholic dominated home somewhere in the sort of the wilds of France. And when there's a bit where he finally gets to the age where he's starting to take an interest in girls, and he ends up, he sleeps with one of the servants in this place. And there's this really unpleasant thing where he's after he's had sex, and he's a bit conflicted because he's enjoyed it, but he's kind of angry at the same time. And he says something like, and in some way I was getting back at my mother. He said, because, whenever you have sex with a woman, there's a certain amount of spitting in her face or you're spitting in your mother's face or something like that. And it was, and I remember the guy who taught us was this lovely sort of middle-aged Francophile, and he was really cool about all sorts of stuff. He used to sort of regale us with stories we shouldn't really have been telling us at that age. And he was so upset by this, and he was just saying, it's very upsetting imagery, it's very unpleasant, and just really unpleasant. And I think it must have stuck with me, that sort of the whole thing of ejaculation with spitting, and the sex as a denigration of the woman that you're having sex with, and so forth. And I think maybe that's where it crawled up from. It was just, the most crass, unpleasant thing I could think of at the time. So I said, she's never going to read my stuff now, is she?
Maybe I will.
But yeah, so that's the best answer I can give you. I think you should get these.
So
all the
credits
at the moment is Twilight.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Such lethal.
Any other questions?
My mother will kill me. It's very nice to know that Jacqueline Kennedy and Simon Hester has her book spawned any sort of movement towards that sort of more of Simon Hester.
Do you guys want to comment on that?
I haven't read her, so...
I actually think that book is really interesting, because it's almost... While the character is definitely of an alternative sexuality, many of the characters around her either hide that element of their nature or just don't partake of that. And I think it's interesting how widely accepted as an underground... it's portrayed in that book. there's an element, of course, that it is a form of sacred worship in some sense, so presumably the society would accept it. But I think that particular society, it's very interesting, basically, that society goes, it's founded on one principle, which is all love is sacred. You basically can't touch it or talk about or say it's wrong in any sense. All love is sacred. And so pretty much when it comes to sexuality and love of any form, it's anything goes, really.
But consensual?
It has to be consensual because it has to be love, not rape. That's one of the things. But of course, this is set in an alternate world where this society exists in France. And all the neighbouring countries in Europe basically go, oh, there! You know, they have, you know, sacred... essentially, some of the priestesses of one of their gods are paid for sex, in some sense. That is a way they act for the divine. And the rest of the countries basically go, but you have whores for priestesses, what? You know. But I think it's interesting, because that novel is very widely read, and I would... And although the main character does engage in lesbian sex occasionally, it's certainly not a main thing. Her main relationship is heterosexual. I would actually wonder if it's in some way more acceptable to have a wildly alternative sexual lifestyle than to have a mildly alternative sexual lifestyle, simply because it's closer and more threatening.
Yeah, I guess if you think I can't ever see myself doing that, then you're safe.
Exactly. You know, if you look at, you know, so random aliens having...
The uncanny valley of sexuality.
Exactly, the uncanny valley of sexuality. If it's too far away, people go, okay, that's just interesting speculative fiction. But if it's close enough that you can actually go, okay, that's not me in that way.
That's definitely not me.
Yeah, it's your thing. It's this male thing. I think it's very interesting that wildly alternative lifestyles in some sense seem to be more appropriate to viewing than heterosexual lifestyles. Do either of you read comics at all?
Yeah.
Do you read Marvel?
No, not really. I wrote for them for a bit, but that didn't work out.
I was just thinking, there's this one sequence which... I was reading Excalibur for a while, and I really liked it, but there was this one sequence where Nightcrawler's foster mother, who is a changing magician person, basically takes the place of his foster sister, who he is sleeping with, and then he unknowingly has sex with his foster mother. And basically, you don't realize any of this until you read a side comic later on, and then you went, what? No! But at the time, nobody batted an eyelid. Nobody said anything. And I was reading the four pages, and nobody even seemed to pick it up. Everybody just, ho-hum, Nightcrawler had sex with his mum, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was this huge thing afterwards where people went, wait, some of these characters might be gay. And freaked out about it.
No, I think that core constituency I was talking about before, the ones with the very fragile masculine armour, those guys are the Marvel core audience. I
mean, right. Yes.
Absolutely. It's not all the people who read Marvel, but it is definitely it's their client base, the ones that they're servicing. Because I was quite, when I took on the character of the Black Widow, I thought it was a fascinating character with all sorts of interesting things you could do, one of which would be, here's a woman who grew up in a socialist context, then defected to a capitalist context, and would have come with all the sort of software of feminism, at least that's theory, because the Soviet Union was never very feminist, but with the theory of it integrated into her way of thinking, how would she cope with the commodification of sex in the West? And it played, I mean, it flew like a brick. They just didn't want to hear it, but they loved the sadomasochistic stuff with there's another Black Widow character who isn't a Black Widow, where she finds out that what she really wants is to be chained up and sort of... seriously, I mean, the whole Marvel perception of what a woman is will make you shudder. I mean, it's scary. Their tropes of masculinity aren't much less twisted, but... you know, they do have the benefit of actually being the doers, whereas, as I say, I think with the female characters, like I said, my Black Widow flew like a brick, so maybe I'm just sulking.
Okay, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Yes, it is time to wrap up. Well, okay. Thank you all for coming.